Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
So today we have a chance to get a perspective that very few people could give us on what it means to be out of the Iran nuclear deal. Here in Studio 3 is former Secretary of Energy Ernest Moniz. He was a key architect of the Iran nuclear deal. He's professor emeritus at MIT and co-chair of the Nuclear Threat Initiative, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that works to reduce global threats. Secretary Moniz, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Tiziana.
Now, we're going to talk Iran, but you are a professor emeritus at MIT. You just heard our conversation with Fred Tice about the university's report on its relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Do you have any reactions?
Well, first of all, I've been at MIT, in fact, for 43 years or something like that. I certainly know nothing about this report other than what I just heard now. But let me say, well, first of all, I do want to emphasize, I think what we all feel, the Epstein saga is one pretty sorry tale, particularly from the point of view of all the victims that unfortunately suffered at his hands. As far as MIT goes, I'll be very curious to read the report. But I do want to say from my perspective of being so long at MIT, one thing I've always admired at MIT, it's a problem-solving culture. A problem comes up, you face it, you don't hide from it. I trust that will be the same reaction here. And clearly, steps have been taken and must be taken to make sure this kind of thing does not happen again.
Mm. All right. Let's turn to Iran. The latest today, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced increased sanctions. Here's Pompeo.
The goal of our campaign is to deny the regime the resources to conduct its destructive foreign policy. We want Iran to simply behave like a normal nation. We believe the sanctions that we impose today further that strategic objective.
Pompeo also said today that the U.S. isn't going to discuss Iraq's demand that the U.S. begin the process of withdrawing troops from that country at their parliament's request. What do you believe is the goal of the sanctions that were announced today?
Well, I believe the goal of the sanctions is just what Secretary Pompeo said, to further reduce their income streams. It's worth, by the way, in this context, to note that Iran's economy has never been an oil economy in the sense of, say, Saudi Arabia. It's always been a much smaller part of their income, but an important part, clearly. The sanctions are clearly hurting. But I must say I cannot agree with the Secretary that this approach is one that will fundamentally change their regional behavior, which we need to change.
Especially
well, because they have been supporting these proxies, et cetera, for a long time. They've done it when the original sanctions were biting into their economy. Frankly, supplying some rockets to various paramilitary forces, proxy forces, is not all that expensive, to put it bluntly.
But didn't the Obama administration argue that sanctions were part of what brought Iran to the
Absolutely.
Table for the 25th? So why are they a bad
Absolutely.
Idea this time if they weren't then?
Oh, no, I'm not saying that they are a bad idea from the point of view of biting into Iran's behavior. What I'm saying is I don't think that it was the sanctions that caused, in fact, some improvement for a while in the regional behavior. It's because we had diplomacy. And in the current situation where the tensions are so high, mistakes are made, like, for example, the tragedy with the Ukrainian airliner, and we've had our own mistakes in the past along these lines. In this kind of a situation, crisis management, open channels of communication, relationships are what really matter. Now's the time when you really need them. The maximum pressure campaign is not being accompanied, in my view, by an appropriate diplomatic thrust.
On that tragedy of the airliner, it's a Boeing 737. It crashed shortly after takeoff on Wednesday. 176 people on board were killed. The U.S. and its allies believe it was taken down by an Iranian missile. Iran invited the National Transportation Safety Board to aid in an investigation about the crash. Will today's increased sanctions inhibit that cooperation or the investigation?
I don't know. We will see. I was a little bit surprised by the original invitation, although that is...
Why? Why is that surprising?
Well, because of the tensions that we have right now, certainly it's very important that Iran invite external parties who are expert in analyzing these kinds of events. And it is traditional and I think required by international agreement that, for example, the manufacturer of the plane, Boeing in this case, would be part of the investigation, et cetera. So I personally hope that Iran just follows the normal course of events. You know, we had a similar situation, obviously, in 2014 with the Malaysian flight shot down over over Ukraine. Once the forensics were done, it was completely clear that it was a surface-to-air missile. Almost certainly, I mean, it's got to be the same result here. But you really want to be on the ground and look at those forensics.
We're talking to former Secretary of Energy Ernest Moniz, one of the architects of the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. Let's talk about, I don't know if you call it the remains of the deal or where the deal stands now. Shortly after General Qasem Soleimani was killed, Iran essentially claimed it was going to respect no limits on its ability to enrich uranium anymore. It was a multi-party deal in 2015. U.S. pulled out. But where does the rest of the deal stand as of now?
So, first of all, Tiziana, I think it's important to say briefly what the deal is, very briefly, namely two components. One component was very stringent constraints on what Iran could do in the nuclear space for 15 years, and then even more important, an unprecedented verification regime, giving tools to the international inspectors that they have nowhere else in the world. And when all is said and done, and I said this right from day one of having reached the agreement, the verification regime is the more important because if Iran is to pursue a nuclear weapon, and they had a program up to 2003, there's no question about that, really. But if they are to pursue it, it's not going to be in one of the declared facilities. It's going to be a covert program. And so the inspection regime is the foundation of confidence in the international community in Iran not pursuing a nuclear weapon.
All right. So where does the inspection regime stand?
Yeah. And so exactly. So today what's important to understand is that the first part of the agreement, they have said we are no longer bound by any constraint there, although one it's a very slim, maybe glimmer of hope.
We'll take it right now,
the foreign minister Zarif, after the Soleimani killing, did emphasize that all the steps they've taken on the nuclear side are in fact reversible. And if the deal,
why would one emphasize something like that?
I think it's a signal of we're willing to talk. If you, the six countries, including the United States, who are signatories, and the EU as well, respect your obligations, we will go back and fully respect our nuclear obligations.
So do you read that as Iran hoping to get the U.S. back to the table, to put the U.S. back in the 2015 deal?
I think they have been consistent in saying that we will engage in discussions with the United States if we reset to where we were.
Now,
in other words, it would require President Trump to say, okay, we will also go back and waive the sanctions that have been put in place that were part of the deal, and Iran would go back to full compliance with the agreement.
Now, there were criticisms of where we were. So, for example, the sanctions were lifted in response to a nuclear deal, but they had covered broader behavior than just the development of a nuclear weapon.
Right.
The sanctions were lifted indefinitely, but the deal itself covered a 10 to 15 year time frame in terms of monitoring Iran's behavior. Is that a table we want to go back to, or is there an opportunity, since I think what you're saying is the nuclear capability development side is the side that Iran has walked away from? Would this be an opportunity to strengthen those aspects?
Certainly. But I do want to emphasize one thing. The deal does not go away in 15 years. The nuclear constraints on peaceful nuclear activities go away.
But that's a big deal.
But the verification does not go away. And again, the verification is the most important part. So again, I don't want to be Pollyannish here. We're not in a good place, okay? But the reality is today, and they repeated it, although it's what they do, which is more important than the words, but they did repeat it, that they will continue to work with the international inspectors as required in the agreement. And frankly, we know that the international inspectors, the IAEA, has confirmed that Iran has been fully cooperating on the verification side. So we don't want to lose track of that very important part.
Is the IAEA known to be effective in applying constraints by being there to observe and report? I mean, are there critics out there that I don't know about because this is not my core area of expertise who would say, yeah, but the IAEA doesn't have enough teeth and so that doesn't give me the comfort I would want?
What I would say is what the JCPOA, what the Iran agreement did, is give the inspectors many more teeth. Again, they have capabilities here, 24/7 surveillance of all of these facilities, an ability to inspect the entire uranium supply chain. They have that nowhere else in the world.
Do you think those teeth are sharp enough with Iran?
Yes. Yes. I do.
Why?
Because, again, what really concerns me, first of all, there's no doubt that the technologies that are being used, the access that they have, the doubling, almost doubling of the number of inspectors, tremendous for the existing Iranian complex. But I keep going back. What I think is more important in the end is making sure that through intelligence, through observations, that any suspicions about covert activities, they can go and inspect anywhere. That does not guarantee. A serious technical person would never say, I'm 100% sure we will find anything they'll do. But what I will say, and our head of intelligence in 2015 said, it raises the bar on getting caught very, very high. And if they get caught again trying covert activity on a nuclear weapon, the international community will come down again on them even harder.
Based on what you know, having been in sustained engagement with Iran, how badly do they want a nuclear weapon and why?
I think that there is it's completely a subjective issue today. There is no question, as I said earlier, that they had a weapons development program through 2003. Everyone has concluded, and by the way, it's consistent with the Israeli information trove, that there's no evidence of an organized weapons program since that time, number one. Number two, there is something that we don't understand really, and that is that they did all of this work around developing the nuclear weapons technologies through 2003, and yet had done nothing to develop the nuclear weapons material that you would need to have a weapon.
But they just said a few days ago, all bets are off. We're going to develop the core of what that material would be, right?
No, so now, if without these constraints, they start to develop again and deploy the technology that could be used to develop that weapons material. That's why it's so important to have these end-to-end inspections that follow the material and make sure there is no diversion of material, et cetera. So, you know, again, I'm certainly not being Pollyannish here. We're not in a good place, but we don't want to lose the perspective that we still do have a functioning verification regime and that so far there is no evidence of their restoring any kind of nuclear weapons development program.
We're talking to former U.S. Secretary of Energy Ernest Moniz, who was an architect of the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. I want to talk sort of bigger strategic. President Trump spoke about our relations with Iran Wednesday after Tuesday night's retaliation. Here he is.
As long as I'm president of the United States, Iran will never be allowed to have a nuclear weapon.
Okay, he walked right up to the podium, and those were the first words out of his mouth. How big of a strategic threat in the strategic threat landscape is Iran's ambition for nuclear arms? Or is Iran? Because I know there are two different things going on there.
First of all, let me say that it was good of the president to repeat President Obama's policy.
I see what you did there.
To repeat President Bush's policy, every president of the United States is committed to Iran not having a nuclear weapon. The difference is, frankly, in the Obama administration, we ended up negotiating the deal that took the nuclear weapon off the table. And the strategy more broadly, and this is where there's a divergence, obviously, the strategy was, and again, I've said this before, very, very much like President Reagan in the Cold War. He negotiated arms control agreements with the Soviet Union while we had all kinds of problems with them in many ways. So our philosophy was, the president's philosophy was, President Obama's philosophy was, same way, let's get the nuclear weapon off the table convincingly in ways that can be verified, and then let's not let up. Let's actually increase the pressure to solve our problems with Hezbollah, with Syria, with Yemen, with human rights, with missiles, et cetera. So that was the approach. That was the foundation for doing more. Now, here, instead, all that's been thrown off the table. We have more uncertainty about a possible nuclear weapons trajectory. And at some point, that can lead to a slippery slope of other miscalculations being made.
Okay, I want to push back to that a little bit, because we had Joel Brenner, former Inspector General of the National Security Agency, also in the Obama administration, also now at MIT. He was on earlier this week, and he said he believes President Trump's initial drone strike might actually work.
This could work. This could work.
You've said this could work a couple of times, which is really interesting. What does it look like if it's working?
It means that the Iranians won't attack shipping in the Gulf, that they'll draw in their claws throughout the region, and won't attack our forces.
So what do you think of that?
Clearly, it could work and it could not work. We don't know. The issue is, and I see, I'm not even touching the issue, military justification of eliminating Soleimani, et cetera. He was a declared terrorist in the United States. The issue is always, what's the risk reward? And this was certainly a risky endeavor. And what the rewards are or the downfalls are, we don't know yet. We will see. What we know is the first response by Iran, and some argue whether it was intentional or not, but obviously it avoided, the practicality is it avoided casualties. And that could be a de-escalating approach. But we won't know until we see if there is a further campaign by Iran. The thing we have to avoid, and this is where diplomacy comes in, we have to avoid the tit-for-tat spiraling that just keeps escalating until one has potentially even a full-out military confrontation, which would not end well for anybody, including us.
All right. That's Ernest Moniz, former Secretary of Energy, professor emeritus at MIT, and co-chair of the Nuclear Threat Initiative, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that works to reduce the dangers of weapons of mass destruction. Thanks for being with us on Radio Boston today.
Thank you. I hope it was helpful.
Stay tuned. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Dearing. This is Radio Boston.